Welcome to the fourth program of a new Bible series brought to you by Wellspring Christian Family Schools. As mentioned in our previous program, our families today are constantly bombarded by evolutionary dogma insisting that nature operates on its own and does not need God, or worse, that the Bible is not true and there is no God. Hi. This is Jay Oxt of the Institute for Scientific and Biblical Research, otherwise known as ISBR. We need to understand that Genesis chapter 1 is not just a side issue. Scripture is relentlessly under attack by most of our public education systems and most of the mass media. The most common attack on the scriptures is the relentless insistence in evolution and millions, billions, and gazillions of years. You can't get away from this premise, which is constantly in your face. You have heard the term blasphemy, right? So what exactly is blasphemy? Well, as is often the case, words have multiple definitions, but one definition for blasphemy is failure to give God credit where credit is due. Let's read that again. Failure to give God credit where credit is due. When people insist that God's incredibly marvelous creation came about by naturalistic processes, that's blasphemy. That's not giving credit where credit is due. Well, let's look at some new scriptures, new as in different from last time. Genesis 3. Verse 1, now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord had made. So the Lord made all of the beasts of the field, right? Genesis chapter 5, verse 1. This is the book of the generations of Adam. In the day that God created man, in the likeness of God made he him. In what day? The day that God created man. Job 40. 15. Behold now Behemoth, which I made with thee. He eateth grass as an ox. Where did Behemoth come from? God made him with man. Psalm 94. He that planted the ear, shall he not hear? He that formed the eye, shall he not see? So you see, we're just going through a few, and there's hundreds of verses like this, where the scriptures tell us that God created everything. There are over 500 verses, either by inference or direct references, that God created everything. Let's look at Psalm chapter 104. Verses 12 through 24 lists 23 different items created by God. To name the items that are the living items, how about the fowls of the heaven, grass, cattle, herbs, man, olive oil, trees, birds, storks, fir trees, wild goats, conies, beasts of the forest, lions, and lion's prey. Then it closes the list of these items in verse 24 with, in wisdom hast thou made them all. So God created each and every one of these. Well, what do we do with passages like this? Well, Psalm 104 is the Old Testament. You know, what's that have to do, you know, with today? Oh, well, Jesus quoted quite a few psalms. How about Psalm chapter 8, Psalm chapter 22, Psalm chapter 31, Psalm chapter 35, Psalm chapter 69, Psalm chapter 110, Psalm chapter 118. Jesus did not specifically reference Psalm 104, but he did specifically reference God's creation. How about Mark chapter 10, verse 6? But from the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. Those are Jesus' words. Jesus is God, right? So do we deny that God created man and all of life? We need to understand that when we say that we believe in evolution, we need to think about what it is that we're saying. So let's talk about biological evolution today. We touched on it in our first session, and we'll repeat here a little bit. But what exactly is biological evolution? All too often, it is treated as if it is merely change over time. That's the way they talk about it. Specifically, though, over a very long time. Time seems to be the god of evolution. Given enough time, anything can happen. And, you know, people can easily identify with long-term change. After all, change does happen all of the time. Each and every one of us has changed a bit over time, right? Little changes can easily, quote-unquote, evolve into much more substantial changes. That's true. But that's not what biological evolution is all about. The classic definition of biological evolution is the common descent of all life on Earth from a single ancestor via undirected mutation and natural selection. Let's look at that sentence again. The common descent of all life on Earth from a single ancestor via undirected mutation and natural selection. That is a whole lot more than just change over time. We call that bait and switch. You are baited with a concept of change that everyone can relate to. But what they are really talking about is a massive restructuring of the physical being and a massive rewrite of the information located in the DNA. They bait you with examples of change and expect you to accept evolution as if it's merely an extension of change. They bait you with examples of so-called microevolution and expect you to accept macroevolution as if it's merely an extension of microevolution. That is a false extension. Microevolution, in a sense, does occur. We'll talk about that here in a moment. Example, Darwin's famous finches do speciate. That means they do have formed more additional species. But our Bible does not talk in terms of species. It talks in terms of kinds, okay? Birds speciate quite readily. They become new species. Birds speciate readily. Other animals do not, okay? But Darwin's finches are all still what? They're all still finches, okay? They are of the same kind. We'll talk about kinds and species in much more detail in other sessions. But you see the bait and switch, right? Microevolution, if you want to call it that, small change over time, produced multiple types of finches, but they're all still finches. No new life form was produced. That's not the common descent of all life. In order to have the common descent of all life, we must have this process of change producing what? New life forms. It didn't. Produced more finches. We don't see this change producing more life forms today, not in nature, and we don't see it in the fossil record. In fact, the fossil record is so lacking in this respect that evolution, a very strange science, has kind of waffled with word games. Supposedly, evolution happens very gradually over hundreds of millions of years, but since the fossil record does not support that idea, seeing all these little stages from one to the next, they invented this new term called punctual equilibrium, which means that it happened in spurts so fast that we couldn't see it. So supposedly, evolution occurs via a process that they call natural selection, which is even contradictory, self-contradictory. Okay? The term selection requires a decision-making process, But the term natural is linked to the randomness of the mutations. We can't have it both ways. It can't be guided and unguided at the same time. Some well-meaning Christians suggest that the selection process is done by God. Okay, but this notion is totally unsupported by Scripture. So you see the problems here. Evolution happens gradually over hundreds of millions of years, but occasionally happens so fast that you can't see it. It either happens too slow to see or it happens too fast to see. And so-called natural selection is even a contradiction of terms. But let's talk about microevolution for a few minutes. Do viruses mutate and cause new forms of that virus? Well, yes, of course they do. They do all the time. But that's not evolution. No. The flu virus mutates constantly into what? Different forms, but they are all still flu viruses. As you will recall, the COVID virus mutates constantly into different forms, but they are still what? COVID viruses. Now, furthermore, viruses are an interesting phenomenon. Started to say creatures. How about phenomena? They're not living organisms. Living organisms have been compared to a factory that is so complex that it can manufacture or reproduce other factories. Imagine the thousands of machines and instruction manuals needed to keep this factory operational. Viruses have been compared to a few bricks on the wall of that factory. It has enough instruction to be able to reach into that factory and steal some components that it needs to duplicate itself. You've heard of the term live virus and viruses that are not live, right? Well, the so-called live virus simply means that it has enough instructions to be able to reach into that factory and pull out the information or the items that it needs to replicate. It's not really a living organism, okay? And a virus that is not known as a live virus, that means that it does not have the instructions to be able to duplicate itself. So when you get a vaccine, sometimes these are they're known as not live viruses, which means they don't replicate, or they give you a vaccine that does replicate, and that's called a live virus. They're both viruses. Viruses, as we said, is just like a few bricks in a factory wall compared to a whole factory. It's not which a whole factory would be a living cell. So a virus is really nothing at all like a living cell. A virus is nothing like a complete factory. Either way, the virus, as I say, is not life. It's merely a simple, by comparison to a factory, a single mechanical structure. Well, what about bacteria? They mutate, correct. But once again, the mutant bacteria is still a bacteria. When the health industry refers to antibiotic resistance or an antibiotic resistant bacteria, there are at least two different causes for this resistance. The antibiotic did its job. Number one is the antibiotic did its job. It killed all of the bacteria. Well, then how come you're still sick? Because now what's left is a competitive bacteria that was unaffected by the antibiotic, but prior to the antibiotic, it was held in check. It was not causing a problem. Now that the prominent bacteria is gone, this other bacteria is now causing you a problem. Now, well, mutations aren't even involved with this sequence of events at all. You may still be sick, but it's because of a different bacteria. The second case where we have so-called antibiotic-resistant bacteria is because it does mutate, and now that antibiotic is rendered useless. Antibiotics are designed to inhibit the natural life functions of that bacteria. That's why it dies. When a bacteria mutates to block this antibiotic, it is usually hindering its own bodily function as well. Consequently, the mutated bacteria now has what? That's called a genetic defect. Okay? It may appear to us that the bacteria is stronger, but in reality, the bacteria is actually crippled. It's just different in that that antibiotic cannot kill it. Either way, it's still a bacteria. Let's make one more comparison of a virus to a bacteria. In a bacteria, the DNA includes a spell checker. This spell checker would discard mutations and often correct those misspelled words. A virus has no spell checker. Remember, it's more like a few bricks. Consequently, viruses mutate like crazy. Bacteria do not. We also must recognize that a bacteria is one of the simplest life forms known to mankind. I hate to use that term simplest, though, because they are still incredibly complex. Remember our factory analogy. Okay, let's face it. The DNA of a human being is much more complicated than that of a bacteria. And just as our language functions with words, so does the DNA. Let's compare the mutations of a simple word with that of a complex word. Let's look at a simple word first. Let's take the word bat. We're going to consider this bat to be the flying animal, okay? Not a baseball bat. By changing or by mutating one letter in the word bat, how many other words can we make? Well, it turns out we can make 16 different words, okay, by changing or mutating one letter in the word bat. We could have cat, bad, bet, fat, bag, hat, bit, bait, if we add a letter, etc. 16 words. Two of these would be animals. We'll consider those to be the probability of having positive mutations. 14 of them are new or other words, but they're not animals. We'll consider those to be the probability of having neutral mutations. But what about all of the others? Well, there's 15,600 others that would be destructive. Scientists call those deleterious. So you see, with a simple word, bat, like bat, it is possible to come up with constructive mutations by changing one letter. Most of them, by far, are not going to be constructive, but it is possible to come up with constructive ones. Now let's start off with a word that's a little bit more complex. How about the word bird? B-I-R-D. Bird. Can you think of new animals by mutating one letter out of this four-letter word? Can you think of a list of any word that you can come up with by mutating a single letter in this word? Well, maybe you can. I have not. But you see, now, for all practical purposes, all of the so-called mutations would be deleterious. They'd be destructive. They would not make words at all. And that's just for a four-letter word. But a human DNA is incredibly complex. Let's take the word elephant. Okay, go ahead. List all of the new animals that you could come up with just by mutating a single letter in the word elephant. Can't do it, can you? How about a list of neutral mutations where if you mutate one letter in the word elephant, you come up with not an animal, but at least another word? Now, obviously, that's not going to happen. You can't get, you know, every change to the word elephant is going to be a misspelling. It's going to be destructive. No words will arise. So you see how the principle that allows for functional mutations of simpler DNA is the exact same principle that disallows functional mutations of the more complex DNAs. Okay, think about that for a minute. You see how the principle that allows for functional mutations of the simpler DNA is the exact same principle that disallows functional mutations of the more complex DNAs. Well, let's change the subjects here a little bit. We've been talking about the DNA and referring to it as words, right? Well, let's expand that principle of words a little bit more. When we talk about words, we're talking about information, right? Well, the amount of information that's stored in the DNA, if that could be stored on a modern microchip, it's said that these microchips would completely fill two full pickup trucks. Okay, and that's just the data. That does not include any infrastructure to access or use any of that data. But let's talk about information, though. I'm going to give you a command. If you understand this command, then I'd like you to, you know, from wherever you are, if you can, do it. Here's the command. Raise your right hand. Okay, here's another command. Lower your right hand. Did you have any trouble with either of those commands? Well, if you're listening to this program, evidently not. Well, what if I said this? Silvez voter main gauche. Silvez voter main gauche. What are you going to do then? Well, the first thing you're probably going to do is laugh, because I don't know how to speak Spanish, and I think that's in Spanish. That would say, raise your left hand. All right, I think. Or how about this one? Heben si ilinken handan. Heben si ilinken handan. I know, if you speak German, now you're really probably laughing, right? So, okay. It seems simple, doesn't it? If you understand the language, you have no trouble. If you don't understand the language, you can't even start. So what's required in order for information to have any value at all? Five things. A need or desire needs to be identified. That need or desire needs to be articulated. The need or desire needs to be transmitted. That need or desire needs to be received. And then that need or desire needs to be responded or acted upon. Okay? This process requires language, and that language must be operational with all five aspects of communication. It can't be in a foreign language, not foreign to the DNA. Well, we'll talk about this amazing language in the DNA in later sessions. It is unbelievable how that works. Amazing. But we won't, not today. The information coded in our DNA produces proteins and enzymes on an as-need basis. This requires all five aspects of communication, which requires intelligence. It requires language. As-need means, remember, identify the need was number one, and then lastly, five is respond to that. That's the way our DNA works. Okay? The DNA is a code or a language, and languages cannot possibly write themselves, right? This requires intelligence. Intelligence means the DNA and you and me must have had a special creation. And this is just a start. We have only skimmed the surface. As we continue in our biology discussions, we will be in awe of our amazing Creator. Well, let's close by reflecting on Colossians 1, 16 through 17. Colossians 1, verse 16. For by him were what? All things created. For by him were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible. Whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created by him and for him. And verse 17, and he is before all things, and by him all things consist. So verse 16, he created everything, whether you can see it or not, whether you can experience it or not, everything. And verse 17, by him all things consist. Okay, now that Greek word consist is actually synestano, if I've pronounced it right, which is where we get our English word sustain. Okay, so by him all things are sustained. So God has A, verse 16, created all things, and B, verse 17, he sustains all things. Let's close in prayer. Father, my prayer is that all who listen to these broadcasts will be blessed. I pray that the entire family will be blessed, and I pray that the faith of each and every person that hears any of these broadcasts will be bolstered, and that they would know that they know that you are the great I Am, the creator of each and every one of us and the whole universe. In our next session, let's continue to talk a little bit more about biology. I've only just barely scratched the surface. This is a huge topic, so we'll break it down over multiple or maybe numerous sessions. And since some of you really don't like biology, I get that. After this next session, we'll move on to other topics of interest and then come back to biology again later. Once again, this is a new Bible series brought to you by Wellspring Christian Family Schools. This is Jay Oxt of the Institute for Scientific and Biblical Research. If you'd like to know more about ISBR, feel free to look at isbrministries.org. Or if you would like to attend any of our forums where we speak about the various topics of creation, feel free to look up that web address, isbrministries.org, and it will have information about the locations and times that we have our creation forums. God bless you and have a great week.